It's the Tiltcast episode 603, Building a Snowman.
And this week, guys, we are sans a Rusty, so it's a fairly focused show this week. We talk more Dragon Age Veilguard and more Zero Cyber, so stay tuned.
Rusty's not really doing drugs.
It's the Tiltcast, as Justin takes a drink.
It is. It is an M-rated show. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason.
And Rusty's on drugs.
Now we can't say that. Rusty is on pain medication for a back injury, okay?
That's still drugs. He's on painkillers because his back is killing him.
You say Rusty's on drugs, you know, there are going to be people out there that automatically jump to, Rusty's out there building a snowman, let's say. So.
You want to build a snowman? It is an M-rated show.
He's enjoying some powdered donuts. So we can't imply that much as we might joke about it. Rusty's genuinely like fucked himself up. Don't know how, but he did. So here we are.
Yeah. Which
just two dudes.
Yep. It is, what is it? Sunday the 17th. Man, it's getting close to Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it is, man.
Man, it's been a busy week. It's going to be a busy week next week. It's going to be a busy... Man, I didn't realize that. I got something I got to do tomorrow night, too. Shoot. Yeah, no rest for the weary here.
He's a man in high demand.
He asked for somebody's birthday.
Yeah, I did that yesterday. The youngest's birthday party. It was interesting.
Yeah.
We decided we weren't going to give him as big of a birthday this year as we have in years past. And bowling alley, which has a fairly good size arcade and has go-karts, ran a special last month or the month before around Labor Day. I don't remember exactly when it was. It was either early last month or it was around Labor Day. They ran a special where you could buy $20 game cards for like $8.
That's not bad.
So we bought like, you know, whatever was closest to like $120 worth of game cards at the $8 price. So we ended up, you know, with a ton of $20 gift card game cards, right? And basically just took him and his friends out for pizza and then took them to that place so they could arcade and whatnot. And because they were the money gift cards, they could use them for go-karts or they could use them for the laser tag,
right?
Instead of having to buy those separately. So they had a bunch of fun, and then his cousin stayed the night before, and then his best buddies stayed last night. But we only had like one house of kids, unlike last year where we had like five different like 8-year-old and 9-year-old boys staying the night at our house. That wasn't fun, especially since the wife decided that her and the girls need to extricate from the house that day last year.
It needed to be an all-boys thing.
I get that.
But
so yeah, I mean, it was fairly lighthearted. Other than, and I didn't come out of the whole thing too wrecked, though I will say, dude, the last, like, the weatherman still has me having, like, migraines and sinus headaches, like, off and on all week, which has made it really hard to function.
I'm not jealous of you. I had a migraine earlier this week. I haven't had migraines in a very long time. It's just weather changes, you know.
It is. A lot of it's a seasonal change. You know, when you're fairly prone to migraines, it doesn't take a whole lot of either a tension headache or a sinus headache to cluster into a full-on migraine. Because, you know, eventually pressure affects blood flow somewhere, and then you're triggering a migraine for whatever reason. I mean, they still don't even know exactly what causes migraines because they're so varied. But yeah, so that kind of shut me down most of the week. You know, most days I was coming home and I was barely functional enough to help Crystal with dinner and then sit down and watch TV. I didn't even fucking play video games this last week.
I wasn't even
playing games on my phone.
Good God. Well, I had a lot going on, but I'll stick to the things that are not quite game stuff. So Friday night, and we'll comment on this. I got Netflix just for the Tyson fight, right?
Oh, yes.
And undercards were pretty good. The Tyson fight, yeah. Honestly, you're going to have thoughts. I'm going to have thoughts. I watched that guy train, right? He had all those training videos of him being fast. And, like, I want to say there was one where he either knocked his trainer out or knocked him out of the ring.
Yeah.
And he didn't do any of that. And there's a lot of speculation if part of that was scripted, but you could bet on that fight, which that it can't be scripted if you can bet on it, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
But I just watched two guys dance around. I'm not a Jake Paul fan at all.
Neither one of us are.
Fucking punk.
I told you so, just from the extent of, you know, most of those training videos that Tyson put out there on social media, etc., and continued to float around all through summer and September, was Tyson looking, his hands looking really fast, etc. They didn't show a whole lot of him moving around the ring. It was mostly him just, you know, punching into his trainer or trainer's pads or something like that, right? But
bro looked like he skipped leg day.
Bro looked absolutely like he skipped leg day. And I said, this is one time I will say I told you so. I said the age, stamina, and agility were going to be huge factors in this fight, and that while I hoped Tyson knocked him the fuck out, I had doubts that he could win.
He landed like 30 punches. Like, he didn't.
Yeah.
Most of the time, he just walked around and blocked. And that was driving me bananas. And to top it all off, the streaming issues Friday night were ridiculous. So I had.
Oh, yeah. They were absolutely awful. Now, keeping in mind, this was Netflix's first, like, live sports broadcast, right? Which is totally different than, like, live streaming a concert. Or live streaming, you know, a political thing or whatever. There's a whole lot more. There's a whole lot less going on with a sporting event. You know, you've got to manage both, not only streaming the cameras and the content from the ring itself, but also the commentary. the commentary table, right? And you're almost constantly going back and forth.
That's a technical thing on the side of the ring. That's just somebody running a mixing board. That has nothing to do with the streaming issues that they were not prepared for.
No, but I'm just saying there's all of that creates a larger, because you have more data coming in, if you're not prepared to compress your broadcast correctly out from the stadium, you know, out to the world, right? Then your files end up too big, which can cause some lag, especially with a streaming platform.
It was 65 million
broadcast TV.
65 million people were streaming that.
Well, there were over 45 million people streaming it from the beginning, like you and I were, right? Like, I watched the entire freaking card, which is the first time I've watched a boxing card in years. But I watched the entire card because I knew that there were going to be millions upon millions of people who, you know, went into stream at like 11 o'clock or whatever, just to get the Tyson fight, right? Because there were a bunch of just Jake Paul fans or haters that wanted to stream it just to see Tyson knock the son of a bitch out, right? That was the hope. But all of those people, I had very little issues with the stream up until that co-main event fight, the two women, I forget their names.
It was Amanda Serrano. Is it Katie Taylor? Oh, that sounds right.
So maybe that sounds right.
That was actually the best fight of the night.
Yes, it was. And that co-main event was where I started having, some lag issues, you know, et cetera. In fact, it actually kicked me out for like 15 minutes by the time I finally reconnected. Luckily, because I was smart enough to do it in my computer browser instead of on the Netflix app on one of my TVs, right? When I finally got the video to reload, it started where I'd left off in that fight. Right. So I was about 15 to 20 minutes behind by the time the Tyson fight actually started. But the fight was disappointing. The first two rounds were really good. Tyson was going after Paul. And Paul was a little overconfident, letting his hands drop, and he was just taking blows from Tyson. They weren't strong blows by any means. I mean, we're talking about Tyson throwing in, you know, throwing some jabs.
It looked like they're
a couple of hooks to the body, but those early blows, Tyson wasn't like swinging for knockout.
I'd heard that he was incentivized to make it last as long as possible by the way the purse was set up. And I can't remember the exact details, but it was set up in such a way that if he lasted, it went so many rounds, the payout went up.
I mean, that one.
And so he didn't do, to me, I think he didn't do a lot to keep the round going. And then he was out of gas by round seven and didn't have the power or the wherewithal to really dive in. And it just, but again, it was such a disappointment to our childhood.
Oh, it absolutely is. But by the middle point of round three, you could tell he was gassed or that right knee was hurting him because he immediately got slower. He wasn't moving side to side or juking hardly at all. And I mean, we're talking about a guy who back in the day you know, his thighs were built like tree trunks, right? Like Tyson had a really strong foundation. Now, it looks like you put a bowl on top of a couple of chicken legs. Like he didn't have a strong foundation for absorbing blows or being.
Well, he took punches.
Any kind of agile at all.
He took punches.
And he slowed down like big time in the third round. And his hands weren't fast enough to block a lot of Paul's jabs. Like his hands were getting there like half a second after Paul's hand pulled back.
Well, say regardless, even with all that, like trying to stream it, so I had Netflix on that streaming app on the, you know, on the smart TV, right? And I had it on PC, and it was just a battle on which one was going to catch up. Fortunately, the last two rounds, or maybe unfortunately, it caught up to live on my PC and stayed live. But there was like all of round three, I think, that I didn't have. I was just buffering. There are big chunks of the undercard before that it was just buffering. Like all through the night, I have a pretty strong internet connection. I don't have fiber like you, but it wasn't me. It was Netflix, right? Kept telling me, check your internet speed. Go check my internet speed. I'm streaming at, you know.
Oh, yeah.
60 megabytes a second. Like, come on, bro.
It was totally because at some point during that co-main card, they started having like 80 plus million people trying to connect to the damn fight just to see that last fight, that Tyson fight. And that caused all kinds of fucking issues. Like my video quality and buffering started happening during that second co-main card.
Like
then it got really ridiculous once that fight ended. It almost like people were texting each other saying, okay, last card fight's over. Main event starting.
Well, it was so bad that my TV app, which is all, my TV's hardwired into my router, right? It was paused right before they called the decision for a full 5 minutes while I watched it on my PC. I was just like, this is insult to injury. Like, you're going to put it here. Yes, I know they just called it for Jake Paul, but like, you're going to put it right before that moment, and that's where we're going to stay. I was so mad, and like,
but Tyson looked old, dude. I'm mad. I'm more mad that he did it, but at the same time, I know exactly why he did it, and this is why I don't know if the
$20 million. That's why quote, he did it.
I don't know if the. This is why I doubt whether or not the. Rumored scripted thing out there is false is because if you go back and you watch the documentary on Jake Paul's boxing career, it's called The Problem Child and it's on Netflix. Tyson was really heavy in that documentary talking about how Jake Paul has the drive to be a real boxer and is becoming a real boxer, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. And how his type of promotion is good for boxing because it's bringing viewers back to boxing and it's changing how boxing is promoted. And to an extent, I agree with him. I just think Jake Paul is Paul and Logan Paul both are kind of horrible human beings based on their past actions. I'm not saying Jake Paul can't change, but based on their past actions,
they're
trash human beings.
They're both representative of the asshole of the internet, which is why everybody wanted him to lose. But I went to bed so mad that night. Like I was like, it's midnight here, right? It's like I'm gonna have to wake up early because I had to reshoot some photos for this corporate job that I got.
Yeah, and I
slept five hours.
When I messaged you and said I told you so, you basically said you were pissed and that you were going to go try and rage sleep. Those were your exact words. Rage sleep.
I did, and I woke up without an alarm at 5 a.m. to go shoot some morning photos of skylines downtown and different landmarks and stuff for decoration in this building. And then, you know, finished that, edited it, done, played some games. Then last night went and shot a band that was about an hour away. Still working on that because I didn't get out of there till... because it's an hour away. I didn't get home till 12:45, and it's such a big amount of photos that I took that it took 22 minutes to upload it. So I wanted to make sure it uploaded and have issues. So I got to bed about 1:30 and woke up this morning at about 6:30, which is sleeping in for me, and started editing again at about 7 this morning. So I've been editing for about 5 hours now. It's about a little close to 1 o'clock right now. So I have been busy. I have played video games, though. That's mostly what I've been up to, right? Being pissed at the Tyson fight and some stuff at work that I can't talk about on here that has kept me crazy busy. I was busy Friday night at work till almost about 8:30. And then, ate dinner and then basically watched the first part of the middle part of the second of undercard. The
co-main event.
Yeah. And then, you know, finished it off. Like, me and my girlfriend were watching. I was telling her to shut up because she was narrating it for me while it was buffering. For whatever reason, she had zero issues because she had been watching it since the beginning. But it was this has been an incredibly busy week, and it's going to be an incredibly busy week next week too. So hopefully,
we've got a busy couple weeks.
Yeah, and then the week after that's Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah, because like this weekend, I know you're doing like Friendsgiving, and I've got my parents coming in.
I'm not even cooking that day. It's not Friendsgiving. It's Drunksgiving is what it is. It's
Drunksgiving.
Yeah. Bring some alcohol if you want some alcohol. I'm not cooking that night. I've got so
Sounds
much going
good to me.
I've got so much going on at work that there's just no way.
Sounds good to me. But yeah, so we're doing that Friday night. My parents are coming in over the weekend. I know you're busy on the weekend. And then Thanksgiving is, I mean, for most of us, with how many different people and places we have to touch, Thanksgiving is almost like a week-long event for a lot of us.
Yeah. Next weekend, I've got a buddy of mine wants to learn how to do landscapes, like photos. And he wants to take some pictures of things. So I said, all right, crack of dawn, pick your day and what you want to shoot so I know where to be or if it needs to be an evening shoot. Because I'm not real experienced with landscapes. I do a pretty good job, but I'm not real experienced with it. And something that I've learned, because every time I shoot photos, I learn something, right? Is predicting where you want to be at the building that you want to shoot or the landscape you want to shoot, because that's where, you know, the sun is going to hit in different spots. And I shot some pictures of Center of the Universe last weekend. And the only – well, there was two issues with them. They were in portrait mode, and these photos have to be in landscape. And then the other issue was I was on the wrong side of the monument that's down there, and I had sun. And if you don't do photos, you won't know this. If you do photos, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So I have a whole bunch of pictures of clouds that I've taken to use as sky replacement when I don't like the sky. And I used some pictures of clouds to mask most of the sun and then drew in the sun. There's a lot of tools you can use to draw in the sun and draw some sun rays. And I used that to fake it. It looks real, at least to me. I think it takes somebody with some real knowledge of like how light works to know that I faked it. But I used essentially, for lack of a better term, photoshopped the sun in and some clouds to hide it, and it looks cool, but I was like, yeah, maybe I'll hang it in my house, maybe not. It's all right.
I'm going to just go reshoot this and be on the opposite side in the morning. It's the same thing. I shot Skylines, right? I went last weekend to shoot the Tulsa Skyline, and it's on a, I call it OSU Hill. There's this like tower that's on a hill that overlooks downtown, but it's on the north side of downtown. So as the sun's rising in the east, that's on your left. And if you don't get it early enough, then you've got a big glare. So I ended up doing a lot of cropping and a lot of shadow masking on the left side to kind of cut that down. So when I went this time, I got there before the sun came up, and I went to a place I call Hobo Hill, which is right next to it. There's a bunch of like tents and stuff and a bunch of like old hobo clothes and stuff all over this hill. I guess I wasn't supposed to be trespassing, but I guess I was. I didn't know it till way after the fact. But up there, there was a tree that I could use to block the sun in my view as the sun came up and take pictures of downtown. And of course, I did put some clouds in it because it was too clear of a sky. Same thing with the – I shot you a picture of your work. I won't say where it's at, but that is some cloud pictures I took a long time ago that I just – I've got a huge panoramic view of the sky that I use. I've got about 100 pics of them, and then I just picked a section of it that matched up with where the sun was at and popped it in there. And the – I guess props to software tool. There's a software tool called Luminar, and when you replace the sky, it checks the light value, you know, the highlight values of the photo that you're using for your sky, and reflects those colors on windows and on the ground and on water. And so it really does a really good job. It's unless you're pixel peeping at 300% on a huge image, you can't tell. Which I assume you couldn't tell that I put that, replace this guy on that.
I mean, I did, but I also do a lot of image editing and manipulation, both just here dicking around for the podcast and for work, you know, like for work presentations, etc.
I don't know.
A lot of the internal stuff instead of coming from marketing comes from me. So.
I don't know, I mean, how you would be able to tell.
Changing, but I still do a lot of it. So I could tell, but I could tell just because, I knew for example, the one you shared a few days ago, I knew there wasn't a cloud in the sky, right?
Well, yeah, if you know what day I shot it on and you were up at that same time, you're going to be like, yeah, it wasn't a cloudy day that day.
You could also tell, again, like you said, you're pixel peeping, right? You're zooming in onto the towers, you know, some of the skyscrapers in downtown. And you could kind of tell that the clouds weren't like perfectly inserted behind it, right? There was almost a little bit of a mask line.
You're going to have to show me which one that is, because now I'm going to have to fix that. I am extremely particular about that, Jason. I edit these photos. So like at 100%, these are like 120 inches across.
Yeah.
And so I go through and then zoom it even further to like sit there and check to see if I have mistakes. So you'll have to, that actually bugs me a lot. You'll have to tell me where it's at on the photo so I can fix it.
I mean, you could try to fix it, but it's...
I know it could fix it.
Most of the time, it's kind of unavoidable.
Yeah.
Just because you have, you know, the AI background replacers do a great thing,
It's not AI, though. It's literally just slightly softening the line around things, like ever so slightly, and then matching the color tone on that softened edge to whatever piece pixel is next to it, and then inserting an image behind it. Anyways, we're getting to like really particular stuff. But
anyway, we're getting into really particular stuff. It's just there's a certain level that people who do it all the time know or can spot the differences. And to be honest, it wasn't like it was an entire line of pixels on the picture. So that's why I'm saying you don't necessarily need to go back and fix it, because the picture is literally more than good enough, way more than good enough. I just happened to notice some of the picture, some of the pixels along the line weren't exactly perfect. But again, I was like zooming in really far and pixel peeping, because you told me what tool you were using, and I was like, how good is this tool really doing? And it's like really good. I mean, really good, to the point like the radio antennas on top of one of the towers was blended almost perfectly with the clouds behind it, right?
Yeah, those are for really fine lines. I have to manually blend it.
Yeah, and I figured you probably did that a little bit, just because they're, when you zoom in that far, like some of those lines are less than a pixel wide, right? Like it gets really intricate, but
that aside, I did get more time with Dragon. You said you didn't get a chance to game at all this week.
I was by the time my day was finished, and I guess, you know, so over the years I've kind of linked it to, you know, some of this is working in a tower like I do, and more than halfway up the tower, like I'm 16 floors from the top of a 60-story tower. So especially during weather change periods like we've been experiencing the last couple weeks, I've learned that my tendency for like sinus issues or tension stuff to just be amplified a lot because I'm spending all day up higher. I mean, we're high enough that, you know, when it's storming, the clouds are almost in front of our windows, right?
Hey, you work at one of the tallest buildings in the Midwest.
Yeah. So, a lot of those pressure changes, a lot of those weather fronts, etc., can tend to have more effect on the state of my head than it does. And I think that's probably why my migraines actually increased in frequency, you know, working where I'm at now versus like what it was back when I was where you work. But not by like a huge margin. I'm not saying that. But anyway, by the time I came home almost every night this week, I was just, my head was so fried that, you know, about all I could do was just keep wearing my sunglasses inside and try to keep everybody to not like whisper, but, you know, everybody had to kind of be respectful, not chatter stuff, because my head was just in that kind of state pretty much every day last week. So sitting down in front of my computer and gaming was not high on my priority list. And I apologize, guys. That's why we've gone week and a half without upload. And I apologize for that. We're fixing that. You know, sometimes life happens and just my head wasn't in the game. So yeah, unfortunately I didn't really game at all. You know, I maybe played Solitaire on my phone a couple times. That was about it.
Don't really need a review of Solitaire.
Right?
Yeah, I played a lot more Dragon Age Inquisition. I played a lot more Zero Sievert. I'm trying to finish Dragon Age before Metro comes out. I don't know if I will be able to. I'm going to play. I'll give some impressions of Metro before we hit the Thanksgiving break. But, as somebody who doesn't do this for a living, right? Like, I've got three, I guess I really have four priorities. I have my job, right? My girlfriend and family. Photos, which pays money. And then podcast and gaming. And in that order, right? Like, and well, I guess, you know, my dog counts as family too. I gotta take care of her every day when I get home. She takes about an hour of my time every day.
Yeah, you've got fairly special puppers too. So it's not like you can have days where you just leave her completely alone either.
Yeah, every time I come home at lunch to check on my dog, let her out, and then I get home and play rope with her and then take her on a walk, which takes me about an hour. Try to wear the little house hippo out.
So what's she watching on TV these days while you're gone at work?
Just whatever's like doesn't have a lot of movement. So it could be like AMC or something like, or like AMC or like sometimes I'll do Shopping Network or like the Hallmark Channel or something that just doesn't have a lot of action because that overstimulates her. She really gets into the games that I play sometimes with a lot of fast action. She jumps out of the seat and barks at it.
Oh, I know. I've seen it.
She's a very visual animal. But this week I dug in a Zero Sievert, making some good progress on that. I got some couple more tips on that, right? It's kind of like, you know, 16-bit Stalker. Like that's kind of the roguelite. So it's kind of what I equate it to. I think the best thing is to do as many of the barman quests as you can to get the progression you need. And then it'll unlock the Crimson Army or the Green Army. I think you want, my opinion is you want the Crimson Army because the guns are better. There's some things that the Green Army has that are better armor-wise, and I can't remember. They've got like explosives. I haven't figured out a good use for those yet. But as you complete those quests, it unlocks different areas in the game that you've been. So there's like six areas, right, that randomize. But there's points of interest that are locked off to you based on your progression. So I think you ought to do the, in my mind, you do the Crimson Army quests. I think they're a little bit more fun. That and, you know, once you start killing one of the other factions, you can start wearing their armor, and their armor is better than a lot of the base stuff that you get. And armor is such a gatekeeper in this game because different things hit you, not just the bullets, right? But like a lot of the, there's these things called blinks that look kind of like aliens from the movie Alien. And they move really fast and they get up on you. They do a lot of melee damage really quick. And having shit armor means you have to kill them before they get to you, or you can only survive like two hits. So like that's a big game changer. And then also just being really proficient with like pick some weapons that you want to work and get all the way as high as possible, right? Like I've got max level on my assault rifles, which is good. The biggest reason that's better is because it takes the range penalty for being up close off the weapon. But I leveled that in SMGs, which they're both really ammo hungry, but I've got the materials to continue to manufacture ammo, and I've got way more money than I need. So like at a certain point, I'd say like 20, 30 hours in, I think I've got 50 hours in this game. About 20 to 30 hours in, you start to become pretty self-sufficient on the stuff you need, right? Like I keep finding these food and water syringes because as you take stat debuffs based on your meters, right? You've got radiation, food, water, what's the other one? Basic stamina, right? Like how tired your guy is. And at a certain point, you're making a whole bunch of coffee and tea, so you take tea bags and coffee off the people that you kill, and then you just mix it with water when you're back at base, and you make coffee and tea, and that keeps you awake. And then I've looted so many of these like food and water syringes off people that I use those. But like as I've gotten further, right, I got night vision goggles, which means now I can do missions around the clock basically and just sleep when I need to. My guy basically operates like I do in real life. He sleeps about 5 hours a day and just takes on the world. But yeah, it's a pretty good little game. I'm having way more fun with it than I should. It's still fairly hard at times, but it's the modding system for the weapons is really rewarding. The difference that all of these things make on the weapons is pretty rewarding. I like just about everything about this game, to be honest with you. But
nice.
It's been an easy game for, I usually talk to my girlfriend for an hour and a half or 2 hours a night. Really hard to play a full-fledged RPG that involves lots of conversations when you're talking to somebody. This game does not require that, and I've been playing it off and on for about 3 weeks. So it is a perfect one of those games to just like chill and you can do something else while you play it. Need the sound up loud enough so you can hear footsteps. But other than that, still highly recommend. This is going on my list this year. Like Zero Sievert is good. Been playing some more Dragon Age Inquisition. Trying to read between the lines and what people hate and what people like about it. I'm still pretty sold on the combat. I've changed up my spec a couple times. I was doing a mage Spellblade build last time that was really reliant on electricity. And then I switched to an ice mage recently because so many of the enemies I'm fighting lately are pretty resistant to electricity. And yeah. So far, I like the control that you get with ice mage. So before, I didn't really have a lot of a stopgap to deal with large groups of enemies other than using a tank to taunt. And now that my mage can literally just freeze people in place and then get out of the way, I don't really need a tank as much as I needed one before. So with this play style, it gives me a lot more options with my side characters. I will say, though, I was kind of thinking about it last night while I was driving out to go do this gig last night. I think that the character writing and development is pretty half-baked in this game. Everything seems super amateuric and super lazy on the writing. I don't really give a shit about any of my characters at all, other than what they can do for me as ability-wise. It's just, and there's this whole cycle of, you go back to base, right, and there's a question mark next to everybody, which means they got a mission for you, right? And all those missions are mostly conversations and sometimes more than that, right? I'm at about 50-50 conversations or go do this thing in this area kind of thing. So you warp out to go do the thing, you come back, and then they've got a follow-up conversation for you. And now everybody that you didn't talk to wants to talk to you again. So you spend another like 15-20 minutes talking to everybody before you go out and do something. And then you do another loyalty mission essentially, right? It's not like the Mass Effect loyalty mission where, you did like a couple of them. There's like, I don't know, 10 follow-ups per person. So, like, I'm in this endless loop of doing loyalty missions right now because I don't want those to disappear by advancing the story too long, too far. And so it feels like it feels very task list right now, and I don't like that pacing. And again, the writing is really lazy in this game, which, like, the things going against Dragon Age is the pacing based on how they do the questing, some of the very, like, amateurish writing that it has. And the fact that there's scenes where somebody stabs somebody and there's blood, but, like, the original I'll rewind for a second. There was something I was watching online on YouTube, somebody else just kind of giving their opinion. And it was talking about the original art direction. So the original art director or one of the original art directors for the Dragon Age series has been with the game with the franchise for a long time, right? And he used kind of that same, I hesitate to call it grimdark, but it has kind of like a grimdark feel to it, right, on these first three Dragon Age games. And so the original art for the game was like that, and a lot of the world building was kind of dark and gritty like that. And this one's just a lot more lighthearted and a lot more, I don't know, like
not a lot of gray area in this game with as far as like what's good and evil, right? It's just kind of like this is the thing that you have to do because people bad. And like I really miss that gritty darkness that was a part of Dragon Age before that doesn't seem to be as much here. There's been a couple of like side stories. I was like, oh, that was pretty cool. But a lot less than what I have experienced in previous Dragon Age games. Like the saving grace is this weird hybrid combat style is pretty satisfying, but I'm having to like dig my way through some of the bullshit to get back to it. Because I'm not that interested in a lot of the dialogue stuff. And I'd say half this game is dialogue, right? I've got 40 something hours in this game, I think, at this point. And still doesn't feel like I'm very close to the end because I've been doing the checklist bullshit on the side. And it's not like checklist like Ubisoft, right? It's just like, go do this quest, then go talk to the person you did the quest for, then have another follow-up conversation, then go do another loyalty mission for somebody, then do the follow-up conversation, and then there's some timed conversations I got to do, so now I better go ahead and do those. And then go back out in the field for 20, 30 minutes to come back to talk to somebody for, you know, talk to five somebodies for 5 minutes apiece, right? And that pacing, like, I don't know who they consulted for this. Like, whoever the designer just is just not, it's doesn't follow a lot of the same design flows as prior games did, right?
Yeah.
And some of the art can be fantastic, and some of, but it's like the writing and some of the art just doesn't match the original Dragon Age game. Now, if you divorce it from the original Dragon Age series, it's really not that bad at all. Except that the writing really needs a touch of 30-plus something writing versus whoever the fuck wrote this. This feels like a lot of the dialogue and writing like feels like it came out of something from like college amateur hour. Like I can't even explain how ridiculous some of this stuff is. But yeah, it's part of it's a chore, part of it's fun. And I don't know that that's a glowing review. That's just how I feel at 40 hours. Part of it's a chore. Part of it's really fun. And if you divorce it from being a Dragon Age game, it's a 4 out of 5 game. And if you compare it to all the other Dragon Age games, because of the way that it's put together, it's, I don't know. There's definitely some disappointment there. It kind of feels like you revisited a band that you used to like 20 years ago, and they've replaced all the band members except for the lead singer. It's and then, you know, they've been influenced by other things, right? So, like, some of the stuff's super consistent and super good, and then other things kind of fall flat. Kind of like the new Linkin Park. So, like, it's – except that's in the opposite, right? The nuts and bolts are there, but the driving force behind the music is just – is kind of disappointing. At least that's my opinion. Yeah, so it's different. I will try to get through it. It just won't be today or tomorrow or Tuesday. It'll probably be Wednesday before I can play it again. So I guess with that, do we want to take a break?
Yeah. I mean, we certainly can.
All right. We'll be back. Back.
Woo! We are.
It's been an interesting week for news. There's seems like there's actually more news than there was last week. But me and Jason are decidedly less opinionated than Rusty, so this may go faster than last week. There is, so I was looking at an article on Rolling Stone that was saying that Phil Spencer was saying there is potential for additional Xbox consoles, right? But they're approaching it completely differently. So I don't know if you guys saw, or you might have seen this or not, Jason. There was an ad for Xbox that said, this is an Xbox, this is an Xbox, this is an Xbox. And it was showing like a laptop, a tablet, a phone, right?
Yeah.
And it was advertising the cloud gaming, which is what started this. And it's still – cloud gaming is still going to be a core component of their business, right? Like they even showed a Steam Deck, right? Because a lot of people are opening cloud gaming in the browser and Steam Deck.
But they are focused on building another Xbox as well. I think console sales for Xbox are not the same as PS5, but Xbox games are played on a lot more than their consoles, if that makes any sense. So I think it's kind of hard to narrow down like how many people are playing it. I think you look at if they ever release like how many subscribers they have to Game Pass. That's how I'm playing the majority of my stuff is through Game Pass, through the PC app, and then occasionally streaming it on my Steam Deck, right? There has been a couple times that I've streamed it to my phone or to my tablet, but honestly, the Steam Deck does a better job, so that's where I'm playing it. But I think it's an interesting way to take the company, right, which keeps the games from being completely backed into a hardware corner, right? Though I guess they're going to always have to be because they're going to have to run natively on whatever console there is. But occasionally we get games that are PC-centric, right? Like Battletech, you know, the turn-based game that we've all played. That was a PC exclusive that was on Game Pass and ready to stream if you had PC controls. So it's an interesting look at it. I'm look forward to see what we have in the future. I'm not necessarily a Microsoft fanboy by any means, but I am a fan of some of the technology that comes out of it.
Well, I'm also a fan of, you know, we all agreed that the Xbox One's launch and the whole debacle with the always online and the Kinect requirement were dumb choices to, I'm not saying to have, but to make, well, the Kinect requirement connection was a stupid choice overall. But the always online shouldn't have been necessarily a focus of their marketing, right? We all agree that those two things were Xbox's big major misstep after the huge success of the 360. But one thing we can agree on is that I think most people can agree on is that from the Xbox 360 onward, aside from those two missteps, Xbox in general, especially after Phil Spencer took over, has done more to make gaming overall, no matter what platform you choose to play on, etc., they've done more and pushed more to make gaming overall a better space and a better experience than any other manufacturer or developer in the industry. You know, Valve has done some things, but, you know, Valve is also a main platform distributor, and they've made some weird missteps too. But if you're talking about just improving experience, improving accessibility, improving the community overall, I think most people can agree that Xbox has kind of been leading the way there, and to an extent has done a whole lot more overall for the gaming space than Valve or PlayStation or any other manufacturer in the space. And I can see where Phil Spencer is going. He's thinking a whole lot further into the future than a lot of these other CEOs are. That can kind of bite him in the butt sometimes because he talks about it way more often than he probably should. But I mean, the always online thing, flash forward, what, 8-10 years now? Yeah. And everything's about Game Pass and game streaming. And those are becoming the big focuses of the space, not just from Xbox, but PlayStation's trying to end around into it way too late. You know, Valve was one of the innovators in that space. Xbox has taken what Valve was developing and was introducing with, you know, like their work on Nvidia Shield with Nvidia and with their Play Anywhere and Steam machines. Xbox has just taken it to a whole nother level. And they actually have a platform that works and works well consistently. Like, if you have a good internet connection, even if it's cellular, depending on what game it is you're wanting to play, you can pretty much stream it via Game Pass and be 100% playable or even better than the playable line, right?
Right.
And that's a huge achievement. That is huge. Now, are you going to want to play an FPS game like Call of Duty streaming on mobile data? No, you're not. There's a little bit too much lag there, but you know, you can definitely play RTS games that way that's available via Game Pass and be perfectly fine. You know, they've made themselves far more diversified than just the console. They are not reliant on their console sales being a large enough chunk of the profit that being almost entirely reliant on software sales is a bad thing, right? And I think that's overall not only good for Xbox, because they were never going to catch up to PlayStation or Nintendo's overall sales, right? They were always going to be third, depending on the generation, second or third. But they don't have to try to push for first. And I think that's good.
Yeah, I guess we'll just find out what they come up with next at this point.
I mean, yeah. I think there's going to be a disc drive in the next Xbox? Probably. But the one after that? I don't know. I'm starting to doubt it. Now, that said, though, the whole digital medium, I think you're going to see a fundamental change in that over the next few years with all these laws coming around now about licensing versus fully owning, etc., right? I think you're going to start seeing some changes to these platforms where where download is as good as a physical copy. But that's not going to be with every developer, because ultimately developer has sign off on it too. Right. Or publisher.
Right.
Like Ubisoft's probably never going to allow that, but there will be certain publishers and developers that do. And I think you're going to start seeing that come around. But that's going to take a few years, but that's where Xbox is pushing too. You know, they're not solely on the rent. The rent is Game Pass, right? Because they fully tell you stuff's not forever on Game Pass. And that's fine. Because that's strictly a subscription service. But I think Phil Spencer would like to be able to say, you know, if you buy the game itself, you own it. If you just want to play it, you can play it as long as it's on Game Pass. And I think that's what they're driving for. So we'll see. I'm also interested to see what this rumored handheld device is going to be, too.
Yeah, I saw that the other day too. But by all accounts, there's like little to no detail about it other than that's something they're thinking about.
Yeah.
There's an interesting thing about the Game Awards. So it's rumored that Shadow of the Erdtree is going to be on the Game Awards because they said that what counts as a nomination is expansion packs, new game seasons, DLCs, remakes, and remasters are eligible in all categories. The jury deems the new creation and technical work to be worthy of a nomination. So there's rumors. I don't know that it really... I mean, it is a lot of new game, but that still feels weird, right? One of the best things that came out this year was literally an expansion to a popular game that came out 2 years ago.
Should we say a commentary on where the games industry is right now, as far as the development and the publishing side of it. You know, these publications are for the last several years. It's not just Jerry's thing, it's everybody has been including or considering these DLCs and these expansions or these seasons for it because developers are focusing on those things versus releasing new games.
Well,
we're seeing less and less new full-fledged games come out every year.
It's the budget
what we were seeing 10 to 15 years ago, right?
The budget for games is getting so astronomical that, like, I want to say the new Call of Duty that came out, which has been, you know, I'm not a Call of Duty guy, but a lot of people say it's pretty good. I'm going to say the budget was somewhere around $300 million, right? Those budgets are astronomical. Like, there's the thing about the Game Awards, and this is actually the point that I was trying to go for, is they tend to only focus, they'll have like an indie section, but they'll never elevate the indie section to the same level that they elevate to the AAA games. And there's still quite a few indie games out there that are actually really good. And that's where I focus a lot of my space, like you said, or like I said earlier, right? Like I've got 40 hours in this pixel art game, right? It's because it's good. It's better than most of the things I've played this year. And for me, like, it just speaks volumes where the game industry right now is focused on production over substance. And I think that's where a lot of the problem lies, right? It's just production over substance. There hasn't been a lot in the AAA space that's been great. I'll be honest with you. I've played Frostpunk and fell off of it pretty hard because it feels so – there's such – a specific way to win that game that just hasn't clicked with me, and it's tedious and not that fun. So, like, thank God it's on Game Pass, but I'm just not having fun with it, which is why not in the same way that I was with Frostpunk the original. And that's why I haven't really messed with it much. So at this point, I'd have to restart my run again because it's been months since I've touched that game, right?
Yeah.
Like, thank God that Clans finally hooked me, MechWarrior 5. Because initially I was pretty bummed about that too, based on the way the systems were sitting.
God, I love that game.
But right now it's definitely a better game than Dragon Age. Like, I don't think Dragon Age, unless something massively changes, I don't think it's going to make my list. It's just going to be like, it's not a must play game like the other games were. And to be fair, too, also at the end of the day, it was not a must play game. But it's so far. It's kind of like you name something a hamburger, but it's a pizza instead, right? And yeah. You want it to be a really good hamburger, and it ends up being like perfectly serviceable, right? Like, if I'm hungry, I'm going to eat Little Caesars, but I'm not going to seek out Little Caesars if I have the money and the means to get something better. And when you're expecting a hamburger, it's just not the same. So, like, that's the state of Dragon Age right now in my head is, you know, it's not as advertised. It's not Dragon Age-y as advertised, right? It's a very layered RPG, but kind of RPG. It's RPG and the fight mechanics-ish. It's more action RPG. I don't know. Like, again, I'm really looking forward to more photos than I am to more Dragon Age at this point. And there just hasn't been a lot that I just left a mark on me this year. So it's going to be a really interesting game of the year when we come up to that here in about 6 weeks or 8 weeks. It'll probably be about eight. It'll probably be the second week of January before we mess with that. But anywho, speaking of stuff that might come out on PC, Avowed will be out, I want to say February something of next year. It launches for most people on February 18th of 2025, but if you spend $89.99, you can get the premium edition and play 5 days early, but you can play on the 18th on Game Pass without paying $89.99. And what you get is 5 days early access, two premium skin packs, and access to the digital art book and soundtrack. The base game costs $70. So to me, it's, unless you're just really jonesing to play Avowed, I hate that kind of pay model, and it's a little bit embarrassing that Obsidian has caved to do that.
I agree.
I will start to look at reviews of those people playing early access, and so for us that are looking for that stuff, because I assume there won't be a review embargo at that point, I will be looking to see how that plays out before I waste the hard drive space. We were talking about Xbox's adaptation or adoption of PC gamers. Stellar Blade is coming to PC next year. And it's important because the dev actually expects more sales from that than he did to get on console. I'm cautiously optimistic. That game was fairly well received. So yeah. I may pick that up and give it a shot. I've got a PlayStation controller. I'll play it on PlayStation controls once it comes out. But yeah, they're definitely looking forward to releasing that on PC. There's not a date yet, so they're working on the port right now.
But I'd say that's definitely, again, an example of an edge that Xbox has versus Nintendo or Microsoft or PlayStation, is the willingness to port their games to PC or design their games initially for PC and then, you know,
well, day one
make console ports of them and it'd be a day one thing.
Yeah. And the Xbox consoles are just heavily modified PCs essentially at this point, right? Like they're not on a completely different architecture like the PlayStation is.
No, the PlayStation is too. It's just it's an SoC, right? Or a fully integrated SoC and GPU on the same silicon, but it's all still AMD RDNA 4
but it's
architecture. It's just slammed together, right? So it shares system RAM, etc. But it's basically the same SoC that's in the Xbox.
But there's different dev kits for PlayStation versus Xbox.
Oh, yeah. There are.
And it seems like it takes them.
Still has their own little proprietary things they try to build in, right?
Right. But it still feels like the
security.
The PlayStation stuff seems to take a lot longer to port over, except for the case of Helldivers, were released same day. But all that aside, there is other things that are kind of new. If you have a Steam account, you have an old Steam account like me and Jason, chances are you probably already have Half-Life 2. So there is a whole bunch of stuff that released for Half-Life 2. They're still not doing a Half-Life 3. There's a whole reason as to why they didn't do it that's explained, but there's a whole documentary that comes with it now.
The 20th anniversary update, baby.
And then there's also a whole team of professional game developers that are working on a remaster in RTX or ray traced, right? Where they are remixing the original game and remixing the assets. But it's a 100-person team, right, of developers that are working in their off time to remaster that game right now. But if you look up Half-Life 2 Remaster and make sure it's by the team Orbifield Studios, you can see some examples of that, and it looks pretty good. But yeah, it's very clear with the documentary they're not doing another Half-Life. or Half-Life 3, essentially. Stalker 2 comes out Thursday or Friday this week. But the system requirements for this game are pretty intense. So you do 1080p, right, Jason?
Yep.
So for you, and Jason is the average gamer with a pretty decent card, you need to have an i7-9700K or a Ryzen 7-3700X. For your GPU, you need a 2070 Super, RTX 4060, or Radeon RX 5700 K. You need at least 16 gigabytes of dual-channel RAM, 160 gigs of at least SSD hard drive space, and of course Windows 10 or Windows 11. But that's for 1080p at 30 FPS. To get to 1440, they recommend you upgrade your chip to an i7-11700 or a Ryzen 7-5800X, that you have a 3070 Ti, a 4070 or 6800 XT, and 32 gigs of dual channel RAM. Everything else the same. Now, to run on Epic, which is 4K 60 FPS, they want you to have an i7-13700KF or Ryzen 7 7700X. Now, I have a Ryzen 7 5900X, which has me a little bit worried. But then they want you to have at least a 4080 or an RX 7900 XTX and then 32 gigs of RAM. So I'm a little bit interested to see how it runs on my machine with me potentially being GPU or CPU gated on this. Because, you know, I want to play everything at 4K if I can help it. But Black Friday's right around the corner, which means I could end up with a new set of things anyway inside my PC.
Well, I mean, as long as, I doubt you're going to be that CPU gated with the CPU you have, but who knows? I could be wrong.
But I don't have any other news. Do you have anything that I missed?
No. Just a big reminder, the next big game, I think, we're really looking forward to. That is going to be a day one on Game Pass, both on PC and on Xboxes. What is that?
Indiana Jones
and the Great Circle, December 9th. So right after, pretty much right after Thanksgiving almost, we're going to have what looks like a pretty damn good game so far.
It's Machine Games is behind it, right?
Yep. I always kind of, cross my fingers a little bit, because they're totally doing a different gameplay style than they have with the Wolfenstein games. But, they've said things like exploration through the world and the levels is gonna be really rewarding. It's fairly story driven, etc. So, I mean, I'm crossing my fingers they'll be good just based on prior experiences with them. But they are taking a lot of the gameplay mechanics and changing them up for this one versus what we've seen them do in the past. So, I hope there aren't, but, I am a little bit cautious that there might be a couple of hiccups, but it looks really great. And really excited for it. I've always wanted to see an almost Uncharted-like adventure game with Indiana Jones ever since Uncharted originally happened, right? I was like, man, I wish somebody would give Naughty Dog the right to just do Indiana Jones.
They've essentially been doing generic Indiana Jones for the better part over a decade at this point, right?
Yeah. So, you know, Machine Games, I feel like, is a close second because
they've only got one bad game.
Yeah. So I'm really excited for that. So hopefully here in a couple weeks, about 3 to 4 weeks, we'll have hopefully good things to say, but you know, we're going to be brutally honest if there are things wrong too. So.
Yeah, but it's a Game Pass release, so it's not like we can't just check it out, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, Jason, where can you find us?
Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast and our new YouTube channel, youtube.com/tiltcastshorts with a Z, and search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find some friends of the show. You've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got Picking Up the Pixels or Pupcast. And then you've got tvgp.tv. They also do RPGs. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.